To inform and inspire, I am Stephen Rick, and this is Sight and Vision, exploring what it means to be seen as visually impaired and gaining relative perspective through the personal stories and discussions of those who see clearly the need for understanding.
Today, it's my pleasure to introduce an advocate who speaks with and for people all over the country through his peer support work, Clark King. Clark, thank you and welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Clark, talking about beginnings, take me and the listeners, take us into your story of where your vision loss occurs.
Sure. Yeah. So I was not born with vision loss. So vision loss came as an adult. I had worked, I was working, had a career working in financial services, in particular in the global insurance and banking industry for 25 years. Living my life. There is one thing I had contracted was I was diagnosed in my mid to late 20s with type 2 diabetes. In my early 40s, I started having complications from that. And one of those was vision loss. And I first started noticing something was going on. I was working for a company running a group out of Southeast Asia. And I just started noticing things about my vision, especially at night, that just wasn't right. And I went to a ophthalmologist in Hong Kong. That's where I was working and living. And he told me that I, was having retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy. And so that started a kind of years of many laser treatments, surgeries on the eyes. I eventually moved back to the United States and got treated there. But eventually my eyes just diminished over the years until I'd say about the end of 2015, where I, pretty much my vision, I have some vision left. I'd say about, 5 to 10% vision left in my left eye and very little in my right eye. I have light perception in my right eye. That's where that stands. And, so that kind of started with me figuring out, what was I going to do?
Sure. What year was that then? How long ago was that?
It was a span from 2009 to 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Being, you said, in Hong Kong, living overseas, I mean, you were already accustomed to living exceptionally, in a foreign country, in a foreign culture. Did that environment in some way change or make the acceptance of your vision loss? Did it influence how you accepted or considered your vision loss in any way?
No, I would say no. It did not,
Culture didn't play a role in that then.
No, it definitely did not. I guess I had that American bias thinking that, I should go back home to get treated in America, American doctors and so forth.
Was your initial acceptance, was it like a single event or was it sort of a process, as you said?
Yeah, it was a process. So, just to even go back, from 2009 up until 2015, I kept my vision loss a secret from, definitely from my coworkers, definitely. I didn't want to tell anyone. I just basically used to say I was living a lie about I could see anymore. I went from, I worked in New York City, and I lived in New Jersey. And I used to take the train into work, but at some point I didn't feel safe enough taking the train to work because I couldn't see well enough. New York City is a very crowded city, and you know, it's not always a friendly city. So, you know, if you accidentally bump into someone, they could interpret that, and, you know, and I'm not identifying myself as visually impaired or blind. So, you know, that may not end well. So I started taking other modes of transportation to work, you know, having people drive me or taking the ferry boat over, which is way more expensive than the train.
So acceptance didn't come very quickly or easily for you?
Right. Well, I guess, you know, there's a thing of denial versus, you know, I think acceptance means, you know, that I'm open about it. So in terms of, you know, I wasn't in denial because I knew it was happening. You know, I knew it was definitely happening. But acceptance, you know, in terms of being comfortable talking about it, being comfortable telling people about what was going on with me, that took, that definitely took a lot of time until it just got so bad where I had to, you know, I talked to my boss and I let him know what was going on with me. You know, maybe about 2014. and so, you know, I took some time off to have a couple of surgeries. I decided to try and come back. And then eventually my, you know, I had a retinal detachment and, you know, they did reattach the retina, but my vision, I didn't get the vision back that I had before.
You're referring to some stages of grief here. And it's obviously maybe referring to Tuttle and Tuttle, which is sort of the standard for the stages of grief and vision loss. Do you think it's true for you, or was it true for you at that time during that initial few years? Like, was there good days and bad days, and were you moving from one stage to another?
Right. Yeah. I would say, you know, I think it came more after I stopped working. While I was working, I think I guess I was so busy trying to hide my vision loss that I really didn't give too much time. You know, it was stressful. It was very stressful because, you know, I would walk into meetings. I had to give a presentation once in front of 100 people, and I had to put a PowerPoint presentation on the screen, and I couldn't even see the screen. I had to memorize everything I was going to say because I couldn't just look down on a piece of paper anymore and see what I was going to talk about. You know, going to a meeting in a conference room, which I was unfamiliar with, finding it and not being late for meetings because I had trouble finding the conference room. Just finding the bathroom sometimes on an unfamiliar place was a challenge. Making sure going into the elevator and going, you know, finding the button for my floor. You know, sometimes the old buildings in New York City, the dark elevators are very dark. If there wasn't enough light, you know, I could really struggle. And so, so all those things, you know, went on, those just stresses that went on. And, you know, so once I went on, you know, long-term disability, and I just realized that I just couldn't work like I was. I wasn't the same person. I wasn't as fast. I wasn't as quick. You know, I was, you know, I had really, you know, ascended up the ladder. You know, I was in management, you know, I was a director in the company. And I gotten a lot of responsibilities. I've been tapped to lead, you know, global projects, you know, many different companies, some of the top companies in the world. But I knew I wasn't the same anymore. And so it scared me. And so I decided to, you know, go on disability and figure out, okay, what was I going to do next? You know, the stress was gone from working, you know, and hiding what was going on. But then, you know, I think one day I sat down on the couch and I said, well, okay, what's left for me now?
Well, you've talked about, or you said that after diagnosis, you did not share the news immediately, or at least in part, you were compelled to carry that weight alone of the diagnosis. Why was that, you think?
Because I think some of it's my personality. I guess closed when it comes to things, especially things that, I guess that would show any emotion, not exactly the type of person that shows a lot of outward emotion, you know, traditionally, at that point. You know, I just think that I wasn't, you know, I have to really had to really get comfortable and understanding what was going on before I could, you know, even express that to others.
Yeah. And excuse me, but the elephant in the room I see here is like professional obligation. I mean, was it really easy? You know, had the playbook been written on how to actually navigate this and tell and share this kind of information with your colleagues, especially people who looked up to you or people you were supervising, was that easy to do?
Absolutely. Yeah, that, you know, that's a great point. Yeah, a lot of that had to do with, I didn't see anybody with a disability in my office. I didn't see, definitely didn't see any blind people. Mm-hmm. Everybody, in my opinion, looked perfect. You know, they didn't have any issues. They definitely didn't have my issue. So how would I be accepted? Would they get rid of me? You know, job security. I was, all those things are going in my head. You know, and you're right. The people who, you know, the work for me, you know, mm-hmm. Maybe they could tell something was going on because sometimes, you know, I have to increase the, enlarge the screen, mm-hmm. You know, the magnification on the screen, you know, maybe mm-hmm. they say, well, you know, maybe they thought there was something going on with my eyes, but they didn't know what, you know, what actually, you know, maybe I needed new glasses or something versus, mm-hmm. you know, a disease, you know, having a disease, you know, versus, you know, going blind.
And you talked about the changes in your daily activities. You were finding other ways to get to work or to commute, things like this. Were there any other dramatic changes in your, you know, the daily activities, your daily routine?
Boy, everything. The way I went down to the cafeteria to get lunch, everything was changing related to my to that my vision diminishing. You know, everything became a challenge. You know, I had to think, you know, I had to think a lot, you know, before, you know, you when you just get up and you go and you don't think too much, just walk. Now, when you have something like a visual impairment, you always got to think and plan. Even today, you know, even though I've accepted it, one of the big differences is that I, you know, I have to plan and think about things that you didn't have to think about before. And so everything, I mean, I hate to say this, but almost everything was a challenge. Like I said, getting something to eat, going to get something to eat for lunch, looking at, you know, the food options in the cafeteria, the prices and, you know, and those type of things. Mm-hmm. And they developed, I remember they stopped taking cash at the, in our cafeteria, and you had to use these cards now, and you had to go purchase a card in this machine, and the machine was all electronic, and I couldn't really see
tiny little
letters, right? Yeah, and I just couldn't see it, and I said, okay, I think I stopped using the cafeteria, so I'd go outside somewhere, you know, mm-hmm. where I could just use cash and get my lunch, you know. So
managers are trained for crisis. They're trained on how to manage and address these things, to keep the ship running, to navigate a collective. But what about the unknown? I mean, there was a great deal of unknown now that again, there was no manual written to inform you how to go forward. Were you afraid of losing your sight? Did you find this was something that you didn't have an answer for? I mean, was there something you were afraid of about that?
Oh, yeah, I was definitely afraid of losing my sight. You know, I said I've been very independent, you know, for a very long time, you know, obviously, I mean, most of my life. And just when I say independent, not just from a visual standpoint, but just the things that it allowed me to do. You know, I drove, you know, I traveled quite a bit, you know, for work and pleasure. You know, I just owned my own home, took care of, you know, it's just, you know, all these things that I did, you know, and I've been really, you know, since I, you know, I say moved out of my parents' house and became, you know, had my first job, you know, and my first real job out of college, you know, I've always been independent, never had to ask anybody for help, never had to rely on anybody for help. You know, I was, you know, you know, always, you know, I'm an accountant, you know, that's my background as an accountant. And you know, and it's just, you know, I've always just been very, I guess, you know, just very regimented with things and organized with things in my life.
What was a someone or something that helped you early? Was there someone or something especially helpful during those early years?
Yeah. In the early years, while I was going through it from a work standpoint, when I was still working, no. I was pretty much going through it by myself, you know. That was just, you know, one thing that, you know, but afterwards, absolutely. After I kind of said, you know, I can't do this job the way I know I should be doing this job anymore. And, you know, going on a long-term disability. But, you know, there was other factors as well going on at that time of my vision, where my vision was going and my, you know, my personal life. That also kind of contributed to a lot of the feelings I was having. So, and that relates to, the passing of my immediate family. You know, I lost my sister to pancreatic cancer in 2013. And 3 years later, I lost my mother. And the year after that, I lost my father. So my sister was my only sibling. And so at all that time, I'm losing my vision. So I'm losing, you know, my vision, my independence, my career, you know.
At that time, when you actually went to your manager and your supervisor and then just shared with him or told him what was going on, it seems like, was there a kind of relief there? I mean, in everything you were going through, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
Was it almost a relief to just have, you know, someone know about this, that now you didn't have to share, you know, or shoulder the burden alone anymore?
Oh, it definitely was there was definitely a form of relief. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say total relief because, you know, I think I even probably minimized what was going on, mm-hmm. even to some effect. And then, you know, I remember I came back to work. I took a short-term leave in order to have surgery. Mm-hmm. And I called my boss and I said, you know, I do want to come back and see if I can still do it. And he did let me know that, you know, hey, look, whenever you feel like you're done, just let me know. I totally understand. You know, if you want to come back, give it a shot. And, you know, I really appreciated him saying that. Then it was still when I came back, you know, I wasn't myself. And my vision continued to diminish.
At what point did you start to seek any kind of formal or specialized training? Did you actually start seeking out any of that?
Yeah. So once I stopped working in 2016, beginning or end of 2015, early 2016, I reached out to the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired here in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And so I started to receive training. And eventually I went to a training school. The government, their agency training school. I went there for 5 months. And I lived there Monday through Friday. Or Thursday, you know, Thursday, quit home on Friday afternoon after class, and we'll come back on Monday. So
how
I did
important
that
was that for you? How much, you know, how much of a big difference did that make? How much of a big deal was that?
Yeah, it was a very big deal. Okay. You know, I would say that, you know, at first it was difficult. You know, my first day, I remember my first day, and they showed me where I'd be living, and they brought me into this little dorm room. Mm. You know. And I'd be living, and I would have a roommate. And I said, wow, I haven't been in a dorm room since I was in college. You know, I haven't been in a setting like this. And, you know, and so I'm, you know, I'm 46, 47 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, you know, boy, how much my life had changed. You know, just a little while ago, you know, I was, you know, flying across the country, you know, for my company, leading these global projects, wearing my tailor-made suit staying at these nice places, hotels, you know, going into the office, everybody's, you know, in some of these countries, hello, Mr. King, how are you, Mr. King? What can we do for you, Mr. King? You know, and I kind of felt, you know, in a way, and again, that's how I, this is how I felt at that point. I said, wow, now I'm like kind of a nobody now. I feel like I'm starting over all the way from scratch, you know, and, you know, but, you know, it was the beginning. It was the start of something that I didn't know what was going to be my life or a part of my life. And I didn't know it at the time, but it was going to be probably one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Would you say there was something you would change about that, your past and how this all happened? Is there anything you would say, oh, I wish I'd done this differently?
I would definitely say I wish that, well, in terms of, I wish I had focused more on my health when I was younger and not so much on my career. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, diabetes is not something to play around with. And even though when you're young, you think you're invincible. And so if you don't keep your diabetes under control when you're young, you're going to suffer complications. A lot of people, when you get older, you know, and for me, it happened in my 40s. And so, you know, so that's definitely one thing I wish I had done better, but there's nothing I can do about that, you know, now. And, you know, it's, I wouldn't, I guess, you know, regret, if you call it regret, but, you know, it's just one thing I realized, you know, I should have done and, you know, and maybe I'd eventually also gone blind, but maybe it would have held off longer. Mm-hmm. You know.
And talking about disclosure, you're pretty open. You seem pretty open with your situation. How do you feel about disclosure? You know, the privacy is a big issue, and sharing your visual status. Is that easy for you to do, or is it difficult? Or do you find, like, professionally it's necessary?
It's a lot easier for me now. I'm not going to be able to fool anyone looking at me. I use a cane to walk, and I don't think I'm, you know, going to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. But I think from, let's say, if I'm on the phone or if I, you know, someone asks me, well, can you read this letter or can you read off this letter or something like that? If I have to take care of something, I says, well, no, you know, I'm visually impaired or blind and, you know, I'm not able to. So can we do it this way? You know, I'll give them a suggestion of the way I can do it and the way I can give it to them. You know, or, you know, if I have to fill out a form and they send me a paper copy in the mail, I'll call them up and say, well, you know, I can't really use this. Can you send me something electronically and then I can fill it out on a computer, you know, using speech technology that exists in the software. I definitely don't can't hide it anymore. And so, you know, I don't want to hide it anymore. That was an evolution too, mm-hmm. You know. You know, just talking about when I went to the training school, you know, I think one of the biggest things that helped me was seeing people who were training me. They were also blind. Mm-hmm. And they were living full lives. They had careers. They had, you know, I remember my orientation mobility instructor was demonstrating to me, we were out in the street, how to cross the street safely. And she had just as little vision as I did. And I'm like, how are you going to teach me right. How to cross the street? Yeah. And I've been taught by O&M instructors who have no sight. We're born with absolutely no sight at all. And I see them, they walk with such confidence. And it's just unbelievable. And it was such an inspiration to me being there at that school, you know, and I'm sure they do it, I would say intentionally, or, you know, that they want to have instructors and people who are like you, mm-hmm. And have, you know, and so that, you know, they set an example. And so that was the start. Like I said, that going to school, that was the start of realizing that I could have a, you know, a life and be useful, you know.
So have the changes in your sight impaired your ability to be professional or function in a professional environment? I mean, you yourself, putting yourself out there and doing the job, do you find your confidence is shaken, or is it like you're inspired now and you're like, hey, I can do this. I got this.
Yeah. So, you know, so now my work is volunteer work. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't gone back to the industry that I worked in. There's other factors that went into it. The industry has somewhat changed. In terms of not necessarily dealing with people, with, you know, from a people perspective, but from a function perspective, and I've kind of changed in terms of being burnt out. I was burnt out anyway. You know, when you work in the finance industry, and especially in New York, 15-hour days, is go, 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 fire drills, fire drill, fire drill, you know, deadline, deadline, you know, when you work in the finance area. And so I was burnt out anyway, so I haven't been able to push myself to go back into that industry yet. And so, but, you know, what I have been able to do is in my volunteer work, I definitely approach the volunteer work, just like I used to approach any type of role responsibility in my career.
You know, what does it do for you, though? That's interesting. What does actually this new kind of work do for you? Is it different? Is it a different kind of rush or different kind of effect on you?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's somewhat of a different kind of rush, but I do get fulfillment out of it. And not, you know, it's a different type of fulfillment, you know. I think I just feel like it's brought things out in me that I never thought I even had, the qualities I had, because I've never volunteered for anything up until, you know, after my vision lost. You know, I always was working, you know, and not working, then, you know, you know, doing something else other than, you know, when I wasn't working, I wanted to relax, you know, I wanted, you know, and so, you know, and so it was such a, so work was such a focus and took up so much of my time that I didn't really, you know, volunteer for anything, you know.
You've talked about, you said in the earlier that some good came out of this. Is that part of what good came out of this? Your visual impairment?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I think my visual impairment, I think it made me a more, I would say, well-rounded. I don't like to use better because I don't think I was a bad person or anything like that. Mm. But I think it made me a more well-rounded person, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to talk about my emotions, be able to discuss with others that I'm, you know, that I'm not necessarily, you know, I wouldn't say strangers, but, you know, it would take a lot. Always took a lot for me as a youth and in my younger years to really talk to anyone, you know, whether it be someone I'm in a relationship with, whether it be my parents. I just very closed off to speaking about what was going on inside of me. And so, but the vision loss, with the vision loss, it's kind of, you know, made me a little more, or I would say a lot more, expressive.
And I can testify to that because part of what I haven't mentioned yet is that we actually met through your peer support group work. And honestly, point blank, it saved my life. So I can testify that you are an expert at speaking and sharing things and imparting knowledge and wisdom and all that. Does it really make things easier to know that others, you know, as you're listening to other people and you're talking and your work with other people who are struggling, like I was initially those first early days, does it make things easier to know that like others are struggling or that others are kind of in the same boat? I mean, do you feel that sometimes?
Yeah. You know, I think in the beginning, you know, once I finished, you know, the training, going to the training school, the 5 months of the training school, I joined peer support groups. And, you know, it was so important to find a community of people who knew exactly what I was going through. I think that was very important to my kind of evolution, you know, as a blind person, to find a community of people who knew exactly what I was going through. And it let me know that I'm not alone, and that the feelings I have, you know, even though people who care about you, you know, family or friends who try to, you know, like say, oh, you know, it's not a big deal, or things that you know you're feeling, that they just don't, family and friends who are not blind just don't understand, you know? And so,
you don't know, you don't know.
Right. And so, you know, so I think, that it was very helpful, to, any of those type of things when you're interacting with people. And then now doing, being a kind of peer support, being a peer support specialist where I'm working with the others. You know, when they start talking, I say, wow, you know, I know exactly what the person is saying, especially those new to vision loss. You know, sometimes you work with people who may have been born, you know, more of a genetic blindness condition, congenital blindness condition. But then others who were not born with a, you know, or at least had no effects, maybe didn't even know that they had a, you know, a genetic, you know, defect or something that would cause a vision loss later in life, where they did, you know, they did drive and, you know, they did everything that a sighted person would do until they were later in adult years. There's somewhat of a difference. And, you know, I tend to can relate more to the latter of people like myself who were not born with congenital blindness. So,
right, but, we do. We have that body of knowledge in which to call upon, don't we? As right. adult onset visual impairment. Yeah. On the flip side of the good stuff, though, and the happy stories and the feel good, talk about like peeves or things that don't work for you. What has become some of the biggest peeves that maybe those who are not, you know, visually impaired are unfamiliar with? I mean, there's got to be something maybe that just drive you crazy. It's like, look, I've got to tell people, please, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, this just happened to me the other day, and it happens to me sometimes, is when people talk about me in front of me and they don't address and are talking
third person.
Another.
Are you a he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, even in the beginning of my vision loss, you know, when I didn't feel comfortable, if I had to go to a doctor, I would have someone go with me, a sighted person, and you walk in, and you know, usually you speak with the nurse or the nursing assistant before you meet with the doctor, and the nursing assistant will say, "Oh, how is he feeling today?" Or why is he here? Or what medications he right in front of me? And that's my biggest pet peeve, when someone does not address me directly. So one of the first things I knew I had to do, I'm going to my doctor's appointments by myself. So now when I go by myself, they have no choice but to talk to me.
They're going to find out.
Yeah, to get the information that they want. Yeah, to get the information that they want, they're going to have to talk to me directly. And you know.
Yeah. So you're going to have to address me. Yeah. Or learn how.
Yeah, it happened just the other day, and you know, and I had to. I went to a doctor's office, and the receptionist and a gentleman who's behind the desk, they were asking, you know, things. They were talking to each other about me, and I said, "Excuse me, are you talking about me?" I said, "Because you can just ask me the question. You don't have to ask each other and wonder." Right. It's just yeah. So though that's one of my biggest pet peeves. You know that I you know or if someone speaks really loud or very slow, you know, I'm saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with my brain.
You're blind. You're not deaf. Oh, okay.
All
right.
yeah. Exactly. And I didn't get any dumber. You know, losing my sight. So you don't have to speak slowly.
Do you? Do you practice what you preach? Like you have years of experience with vision loss, and you're actually helping others with that knowledge that you've gained. do you think it's like, so how do you yourself like, strategize? Do you go through and say, okay, well, it's best for me to do well and play it safe, or is it better to sort of, you know, blaze new trails, challenge yourself and have an attitude of, you know, what do I have to lose? I mean, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in the middle. You know, I think what I look in my life is that what I've done is like the things I always like to do, right? Mm-hmm. I still want to do them and I still, you know, do them, but I just have to do them in a different way. Or an experience I had, mm-hmm. or experience I have to just learn how to experience it in a different way. So I always like to read, you know? I always like to read, you know, whether I read the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, you know, well, I can't read print copy anymore, but there are audio, mm-hmm. there are services yeah. that have the magazines on audio, you know, and so I listen to the newspaper.
And how about getting out? I mean, what about social life? Do you find yourself traveling in different social circles now, or is it a mix from the old and the new?
Yeah, it's so primarily most of my old friends, you know, like from and family and college, they live in a different state. Mm-hmm. So I'm originally from Connecticut, but so most of my college friends and my, you know, my family members who are still living are up in Connecticut. I do have, but I again I've met a community of friends, you know, in a blind community as well. So. We go out, we socialize, we go to lunch and dinner. We still have some of the groups. We have the peer support groups we go to. You know, I go out by myself, you know, and as well, and or with friends. And we go, you know, and what we do is I tell you one of the best feelings I had is I work with my O&M instructor for me to walk from, you know, six blocks from my home to my favorite restaurant, walk in there, sit down and order a glass of wine or order my lunch and figure out how to do that. And I figured out how to do that, you know, using the technology and using the various techniques. And I felt normal. I would say my normal self, you know, I felt like that's what I like to do before. I like fine food, fine wine. I like to travel. All those things that I'd like to do, I do it, but I have to do it in a different way.
I've got to ask then now too, because in your sighted life as a manager, you probably at least once or twice flew first class, ate with silverware. That standard of living, does that transfer? Do you have to say now, oh, I'm visually impaired, I can no longer have a high quality of life. I can no longer accept a good standard. I have to lower my standards. Is that true or not?
Well, you know, it depends, you know.
Is it a redefinition? I mean to ask if the quality that you demand for your life, has that declined since you became visually impaired? Are you accepting a lower quality of life for yourself?
No. Okay. No, not at all. You know, well, hey, I'm not driving my SUV anymore. I can't drive my car.
Thank
anymore.
You for that, actually. All right, Clark, thanks for that. As someone who has to cross the road in front of you, thank you for not driving the SUV.
Yeah. No, believe me, that was some scary times. I was driving when I shouldn't be driving. It took a while for me to accept that one. It's all about, you know, I still go to the same restaurants I went to prior to my vision loss. You know, and like I said, I got to find a different way to get there. And usually if this is my usual spots, they know you, they know me. So, you know, they already know that, you know, I have a visual impairment. So they'll come by, they'll tell me what the specials are, or, you know, sometimes they'll just tell me, you know, what's on the menu. For me, it's just, I always want to be able to do it. I feel like I worked hard a lot of my life, and I want to enjoy those things and that I always, you know, wanted to enjoy, even though I can't see as well.
And we talked about the adult onset having different conditions and a different situation than those who are congenitally blind. But in adult onset, we have a body of knowledge from our sighted life that we can draw upon when we're going into the becoming visually impaired. Do you find yourself managing your blindness or visual impairment? Do you call on the experience as a manager when you were sighted? Do you think that helps in managing your visual impairment?
Yeah, I would say, the way I carry myself, the way I speak, the way I address others, definitely. When I'm trying to get something, I say, like, you know, when you work in, you know, corporate America, you sometimes, you know, you have to do things to get the job done that you don't necessarily want to do. And sometimes you have to learn how to play the game. There's a game you play. And then in life, there's also a game. And so you got to learn how to play the game to get what you want. And so definitely, when I'm going to talk to someone, whether I have to get something and, you know, it relates to my, you know, my blindness, and I know I say, okay, what are the right words to say to get this person, to get me what I want? I don't want to say this because I know, you know, when you're dealing with certain, especially when you're dealing with these government agencies, there's certain key words you don't want to say because they'll try to steer you to the cheapest way or the way that, you know, going to cost them the less. And so I'm a big rehearser, rehearsal. You know, I've done, my career, I did a lot of public speaking. I even took public speaking classes. So definitely I think about those things, and I definitely use my experience in management and giving presentations and how to persuade people to a point.
On the flip side of that, do you think the white cane sort of prevents us from having a good time or looking like we should have a good time? Does that white cane sort of become something that just dampens people's expectations? I mean, what about, you know, visually impaired people getting wild and crazy? Do you think the white cane sort of prevents that socially?
No, I think it's now if you ask me personally, I wasn't wild and crazy before my vision loss and my personality. You know, one thing I always say is, like, you know, your personality is your personality, you know. And, sometimes there are, expectations, or maybe, I see many things come across where there are opportunities for blind people to be active, in recreation or sports. And I say, there's something in New Jersey they have every year for surfing for the blind. Now, I would never get on a surfboard when I was sighted, so why would I want to do it? Just because I'm blind, I don't think I want to do it. Or jump out of an airplane, you know, there's blind people who jump out of airplane. Those are things that I would never do. I'm very, or ski down a mountain. You know, I don't think just because I'm blind, I have to do those things to prove that I'm living. You know, I'm going to do the things that I did before. I want to do the things I did before my vision loss that gave me enjoyment. And you also get into the point of when people see your white cane. I just got to the point, I don't care what people think.
Technology. Do you think technology makes your life possible? Does it make it easier, or does it make it really enjoyable?
Yeah, you know, I guess at my time of vision loss, technology has kind of was already advanced. So I don't know what life was before that, but it's definitely has made things better for me and definitely, I would say, I couldn't imagine it not, what would be if these things were not around, the things I do on a daily basis, like on my television, I have voice control that tells me what channel I'm on, audio description on, TV shows or movies that you want to watch, apps on your phone that have a camera and that will tell you what's in front of you. You know, there's so much technology out there. Your computer, you know, computers that talks to you as you touch a keystroke. You know, it's I couldn't imagine. I can't imagine what a you're right. Well, how I could live my how would I live my daily life if those things were not around?
So you're you're sincerely a very active advocate for blind rights, and what changes do you see in the future for opportunities relating to blind and low vision persons? Do you think it's you know, is the outlook optimistic? Is it bright, the future for blind and low vis?
Yeah, you know, I think it's you know, the careers, you know, that are what's going on now. You know, so much now is so much into science, technology. You know, and those things are definitely, you know, so accessible now. And to the extent, you know, that, you know, young blind, you know, kids who are exposed to that, I think at an early age, you know, I think those are some real opportunities in those fields. And that's a lot with the organization, one of the organizations I work with, that they do quite a bit of. Start early with young people and exposing them to that.
Talking about advocating for oneself, do you think one can advocate for others if they don't know how to advocate for themselves?
I think it's a strong definitely.
I mean, you had to learn that way, actually.
Yeah, I think before I could advocate for anybody else, I definitely had to learn how to advocate for myself. That would work for me.
You've talked about the assumptions people make, the stereotypes that are out there for blind people, how blind people are still interpreted and remain to be interpreted or perceived in society. How do you think those assumptions and those stereotypes, do you think they're going to change in the future? How do we change those, some of those things that, you know, like that you were mentioning? Do you think that'll ever change? Will people always see us the same way and yell at us when they try to talk to us in third person?
You know, I think if you have confidence in yourself, people will see that. So I think, you know, definitely the more they see us in the world, the more they see us in the world, I think, their perceptions, you know, will change. The more they see us in restaurants, you know, traveling on vacation, you know, doing all the things that, you know, everybody else does, or, you know, which, you know, they consider people who don't have a disability.
Just being out there. I know.
Yeah, just being in society.
Yeah. We've talked off air. I know that you're a big fan of living in a city, but why? Why do you believe that that's best for your lifestyle? Or best for you?
Well, number one, I grew up in a city, so I'm a city kid. So I've never, I think I've maybe lived in a maybe suburban or rural area maybe once in my life or a couple of years. And so I grew up in a city. I think there's a benefit I found for me losing my eyesight. Obviously, you know, living in the New York City area, in New Jersey, the public transportation is very good. You know, you got a number of options, you know, between buses and trains, the train system, you know, getting in and out of New York City, you know. So it definitely, those things, getting to work, you know, I mean, if I look at it, most people or many people, who are not visually impaired or don't have disabilities, don't have cars. They don't have cars. They you know, they use the public transportation. So, if you see the parking situation, you know, I live in Jersey City and in New York City, you know, parking on the street parking is a nightmare. So that for me, that was a benefit because of the transportation system. And just being able to get around, you know, get to my doctor's appointments, you know, and I do hear stories from people who live in more rural areas who are also blind, and their complaints about, being able to get places easily or less, ex not very expensive, are being too expensive to get place, having an Uber, Uber or Lyft or something, rideshare, one of those companies is can be very expensive if if you don't have a good public transportation system where you live. So it's so for me, I just found it very beneficial to live in a city. You have a your doctors, are just more of a selection, and less time, it takes to get there, to travel there, to and from
There are
places.
some conveniences, aren't there, in the
Yeah,
city?
you're right.
Well, for those who are new to vision loss or are struggling with it, is there like a brief anecdote or something about a time in your life when going forward just didn't seem viable? Is there something you could offer to that person who may be listening now?
Yeah,
No pressure.
yeah. Well, I think there was a very short period of time. I really feel for myself, when, like I said, when I stopped working, I went on disability my last day at the office and cleared out my office and went home. The next morning, I was on my couch and say, okay, what next? I need a purpose. What is going to be the purpose for me to get up in the morning? And I just feel that, my turning point was just, I just knew that I was the same person that I always was. And I just needed to figure out how, blindness doesn't change you, who you are inside of you. It doesn't change who you are. It's a physical, you have a physical disability, right? But the person who you are inside your soul is not changed. And so you just got to figure out how do I do what I want to do? How do I live life, that I want to live? And that's just something that I had to, I knew I didn't necessarily have the answer or know it at that point how it was going to happen, but I just knew that I was going to have to find a reason to get up in the morning and not, lay
The
around in my,
purpose is important.
yeah, finding a purpose to get up in the morning and find ways to, work on my, health, mentally, physically,
Do you think talking about issues like on a show like Sight and Vision, do you think it can help to move the needle or facilitate some kind of understanding or do anything good?
Yeah, no, I think it can. I think
I mean, what comes out of something like this, you know?
yeah, I think obviously for people who are going through what we go through, I think it I think it hopes it, lets them know that, there is, life after blindness and you don't have to be, and I'm using the mantra of of the National Federation of the Blind organization I belong to, blindness is not what's going to hold you back, and it's not, you can, if you want to do it, you can do it. You just got to figure out how to do it. And there's blind people all over the country, or probably all over the world that are, doing things that, many people didn't think that blind people can do. And so, I have a good friend who's preparing. He's completely blind. He lost his vision similar, he lost his vision overnight. It wasn't even gradual. And he's preparing to run, the New York City Marathon, because he ran marathons prior to his vision loss. And he's continued to run, he just had to figure out do a different way. And he's not letting his blindness hold him back, So, there's just so many things, And now for people who are sighted who are listening, I don't know, maybe it gives them a perspective that, you know, blindness is not the worst thing that can happen in the world. Because I've had people tell me that they don't know what they would do if they went blind. They would want to maybe, you know, not live anymore if they couldn't see. They think that that's the worst thing that could possibly happen to them. And maybe they, listening to this show, that they realize it's not the worst thing that can happen to you, right? In many ways, it could be the best thing that happens to you.
Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners that you haven't yet mentioned?
Yeah, you know, if you don't mind, maybe I give a plug of a few of the organizations that I work with. If you don't mind, the first is, you know, how we met, you know, with through Eye to Eye, which is a phone-based one-on-one peer support, where people who are, you know, dealing with the emotional or physical aspects of vision loss. You know, they speak with, you know, peer support specialists who are also blind and visually impaired. And, you know, we help them with, you know, finding out information and resources and you know, dealing with, you know, wellness.
And for more information, they can go to what's the website address?
The website is, it's through Rutgers, and unfortunately, I can't memorize it.
That's good enough. For more information, just go do a search through Rutgers for eye to
Yeah,
eye.
if you do a search, eye to eye, yeah, Rutgers University. So it's EYE, the number two, then I EYE again. So it's eye to eye, and just do Rutgers University.
You can make donations through that site as well, I believe.
Absolutely, you can make donations, and also yeah, we do have an email address if you are inquiring, want to get more information. That I do know that one. It's I to I, that's EYE two, that's the number two, EYE, and it's at SHP, that's Sam Harry Paul, .Rutgers.edu. And so if you want to find out about more services and you have someone contact you about services and getting services with eye to eye or for a family member. And we don't just work with the blind and visually impaired people, we also work with their family members as well. And because sometimes you know, we don't realize the impact of vision loss on your family members and loved ones, you know, and friends, you know. So we also work with family members as well in helping them. And the other organization is, as I mentioned, I am a member of the National Federation of the Blind. And I think I went to my first meeting in November 2017. And the National Federation of the Blind is, we are an advocate for the blind. We advocate by helping blind people and believing that blind people can operate equally in society. You know, with you know, some a little slight, you know, adjustment or accommodation, you know, that we can should deserve access to all the other things that everybody else has in society. And we do that by, you know, trying to pass laws either both federally, at the federal level and the state and local level. And so I'm president of a chapter here in New Jersey, the Northeast chapter, and I sit on the state board, the second vice president on the state board for the National Federation of Blind in New Jersey. And so I do quite a bit of work with them as well. And that helped me understand, we call it the NFB, National Federation, helped me understand what were some of the things that I was feeling and kind of put them into a perspective where I could articulate it clearly. So I could advocate for myself and knew how to, how to advocate for myself and then going to help advocate for others. And so all those things kind of, kind of made me, I think helped me, as like I said, be a more, say, well-rounded person after blindness, you know. And so, yeah.
Thank you, Clark King, for being here today, and thank you, listeners, for being willing to see things differently. See you next time, and until then, what do you see when you can't? I am Stephen Rick, and this has been Sight and Vision.